We're talking about Mars this evening. I even forgot to put it on up here. All right. Now, when we talk about the personifications of Mars, to really appreciate Mars, intellection doesn't work very well for that, because it's probably the most non-intellectual and maybe anti-intellectual planet of them all. The Moon is a nature planet, but it understands internal knowledge. Saturn is a very dark, earthy planet, but it appreciates mind. But Mars is almost anti-intellectual. But it is as essential as it is non-intellectual. We need energy to experience or to accomplish anything. And Mars represents the personification of energy. So if you can think of someone who is pure energy and nothing else, that is Mars. So such a personification, since it is energy, identifies with itself, and it identifies with energy. And where Mars is in the horoscope is where one is likely to identify with energy. I live in the first house. I like energetic surroundings. I live in a place that is all red, and my body likes that. It responds to that. If one identifies with energy, any abridgment that there is to energy would be met with resistance, and most likely violent resistance. There would be great frustration about it. So in the experience of energy, it is exhilaration if the energy is flowing. It doesn't even have to be doing anything important. Sometimes it's just like you rev the motorcycle's engine, and that's enough. There can even be a kind of intrigue as to the outcome of energy. One might be hypnotized by the feel of energy and carried away in that. Energy can't exist in a static state. It can't stay within potential all the time. It has to be expended. And where Mars is in the horoscope indicates that you have to expend energy. So this means action, even if the action is destructive. A thing that is left undone, whether it be for good or for bad, for Mars is a challenge. I'm going to have to do this. I need to do this. And if it isn't done, my goodness, well, you know. So it needs direction if it's to be used positively at all. But at the same time that it needs direction, it resents it. It does not want to be held in check. And consequently, if there are situations with Mars and Saturn or Mars and Pluto, there's a great deal of resentment if the flow of energy is in any way held back. One can get carried away with energy expression. And a lot of people do that. They feel energy, and they get the idea, and you'll find this not only like in things like athletics, but you'll find it among New Agers. You'll say, they'll say the more energy you spend, the more you can get, like the universe has unlimited energy in it. That is true, but the capacity to really specialize that energy is not quite as simple as the exhilarating spending it. So it's a very different way of looking at things. For this personification, The feel of energy is not enough. It is the change that goes with it. We're talking about the personification of something that wants to participate in change. And that is its great concern in life. So, the importance of participation in change can be either something like renewal, or construction, or blasting something down. You find this is a youthful planet, and you find people in their youth, when they see something, they take that as a challenge, as something to destroy. Especially young men are like that. I never really understood it, but you know, it's that kind of thing. So, if you personalize this, or if you psychologize this, Mars represents egotism. Not egoism, which is more of the self, and it is a selfish thing, but egotism is something that is very personal. You know, like, look at what I can do. I'm gonna feel my muscles, that kind of a thing. It likes to flex its muscles, and it likes to show off what it can do, and that's that kind of egotism. And relative to being a personification of energy expression, it is a comparative energy expressor. That is to say, there's rivalry. Who can make the bigger blast? Or who can, or who can drag race and outrun the other person? It's that kind of thing. Bragging rights. Obviously, one of the best things for Mars is to put it to work. And there can be a very exhilarating feeling in the quality of work. And it does what it does with ardor, and it does it with enthusiasm, and it does it with sincerity. So if you look at Mars in the horoscope, it is often the prime indicator of the amount of work that someone has. It isn't necessarily skilled work. It likes the zest of it all, and it likes the sweat of it all, and it has sort of a can-do kind of attitude. It has gumption, and gumption is a really important thing. Now, this gumption is a kind of confidence, and confidence is kind of plucky. It's not a matter of this being an optimistic philosophy as much as it is more of a confidence in just pure raw energy. So it's like the love of horsepower, or the I've got a bigger bomb than you have, or the muscular feeling that one gets in proving they can do something. Now, in general, this is a very primitive philosophy, and it's like the philosophy of Thrasymachus in the Republic by Plato. Thrasymachus argues that might is right, and whoever has the greatest amount of might is right. They can have their own way, and their way is right. It's like there isn't a rational standard of right. And it isn't like there is a quality of love or there isn't a sense of goodness. Who's ever got the strength has the right. Now, this represents dynamism. And that dynamism does not necessarily have to be completely physical. If you have somebody that has Mars together with Mercury in a strong aspect, for example, you have somebody that is a dynamic thinker. They will bound from conclusion to conclusion, and they'll do so very swiftly. So it fits into other realms as well. And when it does, it becomes assertion, or it becomes application, or it becomes initiation or taking the initiative in things. So it isn't purely physical. It will be offensive in both the description of the activity and in the pejorative. It can be quite perverted in taking the initiative. And it can go as far as taking war, even a financial war if necessary. So it has the qualities of belligerence or even meanness or cruelty. It can be pugnacious. And it is a personification of fighting. It's as if the energy can't expend itself quickly enough, and anything that gets in its way means trouble. Enlarging on what we said earlier, the greatest enemy of this personification is limitation. It does not wish to be curtailed. It wants to accomplish something, and it wants to do, if it can be curtailed, and it can be brought to mechanical perfection, but it takes a long while of taming for that to take place. So if it doesn't get its way, it explodes. So it's the planet of ill temper. So it's an animative planet. It pushes, it drives, and it activates. Now, another personification of Mars is when it's psychologized, the energy becomes a personification of courage or of bravery. Bravery being the more physical expression, courage being the more psychological expression. Sometimes, from doing work and accomplishing things, you develop a simple strength. And that simple strength is you do something, you feel better about yourself, and you feel better about yourself, you rely more on yourself. And a constant building up of that is what we would call bravery. It's not a really hard to understand thing. It's quite simple. It's a simple strength that one gets from having practiced action for a long time. Now, when it manifests as courage, it has a quality of self-esteeming or self-respecting. Not the self part so much, but I guess you could say auto-esteem or auto-respect. So it's a planet of pride. And it becomes a personification then of the courage of our convictions or the bravery we have in carrying out our ambitions. You know, when you're on a roll, you can have an awful lot of courage just because you're on a roll and you can feel that. And to some extent, that's the way that Mars works. So it is direct, simple, challenging courage. Sometimes it is intellectual courage. Again, if it's together with Mercury or something like that. Sometimes it's a belief in a kind of pride that you can do anything if you just gut it out. And that gutting out kind of quality is what Jupiter represents. Jupiter and Mars together, I'm sorry. It depends on the position and the aspects and things like that. If it is a shallow kind of bravery, It will blow itself out. It doesn't last long. But in any case, shallow or deeper, it brings vigor, and it brings rigor to almost anything. So it's the feeling that one has of right now, of doing something. Soldiers, for example, are ruled by Mars. And in war, very few soldiers fight for their country. That comes afterwards when the flag is being raised or something like that. Most soldiers fight for their buddies because there is that martial camaraderie and that mutual respect that they have from having gone through the same discipline and having been close with each other for a long time. So one can act decisively as if one's entire being depended on it, and if one is very much Mars-like, that happens. This is a hero kind of person. It's someone that believes in what they're doing. Most heroes are people who save others, people who are close to them. They're not heroes for the country or for the religion or anything like that. It doesn't hurt that they get shiny medals for doing what they did, because that fits right into the martial model. And if you knock down all those bowling pins, you get a shiny big trophy at the end of the year. It's that kind of consciousness. Now, so far, even though we've tried to look at it together with intellectual planets or more spiritual planets, we've been pretty shallow in terms of going into the inner workings of character as far as looking at Mars. One of the personifications of Mars is the personification of desire or of motivation, which is to say that it is more than just the energy, it is the inner incentive or the inner push that initiates the energy as well. That's found much more in the desire nature and not so much in the etheric nature where the vital energy is concerned. So Mars is a personification of the desire principle. Desire wants to move toward the object. It wants to possess it, or it wants to wipe it out, or something like that. So Mars is like raw desire. And it's sort of like wanting everything, not in a possessive sense, but just in a matter of that one revels in desire, in desiring something. We're talking about a psychology here that is not only identified with energy. It is identified with emotional excitement. That's very important. If we desire things, or if we desire to change things, it gets us going. It impels us, and we start putting our energies in motion. This is why a chart that has a weak, like especially an unaspected Mars, is a very difficult life. It's insipid. And sometimes, I've run into it a number of times in life, you'll find somebody that has all kinds of talents and all kinds of abilities, and they've got the world's fair of the capacity to do things. They don't have any Mars, and they never really get anywhere because they don't activate things. It's kind of a sad thing to see all those talents go to waste like that. So if we're egoists and we revel in shallow excitement, Mars can then represent temptation or allure, the things that excite the desire. There's like a sympathy between the desire itself and the thing that one desires. And that we would call temptation. If we think it's bad, we would call it temptation. If it's good, we'd call it motivation. We would be very happy to be motivated in that direction. Now it can be in this desire level, it can be used very well with spiritual planets. For example, you can't have an effective prayer that is weak in intensity. So if you put Mars together in a good, strong aspect with Neptune, you have somebody that from the desire to help, or the desire to harm, you have somebody that packs a pretty powerful kind of prayer, somebody that has the oomph. In fact, in some cases, Mars together with Neptune uncontrolled represents supernatural powers, like the quality of going berserk, so that you're almost invulnerable in battle. So we're talking about something that the motivation and what it can do, because it transcends energy, is quite remarkable. If left uncultured, Mars tends to be shallow. It tends to be immature. It tends to be tasteless. It tends to be boastful. And it tends to become unimaginatively mechanical. Engineers wear white socks, you know. I won't tell that to Jonas. So it's that kind of shallow kind of desire. If Mars is not motivated to battle with the big kids, it'll be very happy doing and things that it can always win at, because it'll get some kind of cheap thrill. You know, taking cheap shots is a martial kind of quality. Sometimes, if Mars is allowed too much to get involved with things of the Earth and satisfying its desires in the basest and most sensual kinds of things, Mars then turns into a base, vulgar kind of planet, and it's capable of blunt cruelty and all of those things. Now, if motivation, which is normally to direct us toward a given object, is not oriented to an object, and it sees others that are, it'll try to get onto the same object. That energy left unattended and psychologized in the desire nature will be envious. And it'll do what it can to counter or combat other people in the fulfillment of what was originally their desire in the first place. Now, because this motivation loves excitement, the kind of desire where someone gets thrilled by emergency situations is ruled by Mars. So you have the military, or you have police, or you have firefighters, or you have EMTs, or you have rangers, or you have scouts, you have explorers, all of those people who take this kind of motivation and make it a whole way of life. Now, this can be taken to yet another level, you might say a hyper level. And then Mars becomes a personification of passion. There is a kind of, or a level of desire that goes beyond mere motivation. It gets into a kind of overdrive. And in that overdrive, it becomes almost a divine characteristic, and that is what passion is. We're not only talking about sexual passion, we're right near Easter, we're talking about the passion of complete and total surrender of cosmic power to an event to save people. That is a passion. So in this regard, Mars is something that is much bigger than simple desires and motivations. It's something like what psychologists would call a drive or drive, something that drives us impetuously, even blindly, you know, because Mars is not always a self-conscious planet. It's primitive. And in primitivity, we lose ourselves into the thing that we are driven to. This drive can be a drive for preserving something, a drive for destroying something, but most common, it is a drive for procreation. The people who have the strongest procreative tendencies, and I don't mean parenting skills or the desire to have children, comes from Mars, which is why many of the people who are most eager to be procreators are not the best parents. In fact, they're off on something else. You know, I've sowed my seed and that's enough. We can carry on from there. it can be seen as a passion or an energy that can be distilled into an almost magical essence. And in this sense, it is called a kind of life energy. In mysticism, it is often associated with the basis of the spinal fire, which some call the Kundalini fire, which is not at all limited to sexual passion. If one learns to tame the serpent, it can be brought to almost any kind of level, but it all starts with energy. It can be fierce and it can be frenzied, but it is a basic passion. Psychologists have a good word for it that is both psychological as well as energetic. And I think if you add that to the idea of the spiritual life force and use the word libido, which is the drive and passion to live life, it gets focused into sex, but it's more than that. It becomes something almost unstoppable. Another personification of Mars is as basic masculinity. Not paternal masculinity, which would be more like Saturn or the Sun, but just raw masculine qualities. Even if it is in females, there is a masculine quality about it. So this is that planet of machismo. It likes all those pissing contests and stuff like that. It likes strutting its stuff. It doesn't want to be limited in doing all of that. And it isn't limited to just male incarnations. When we take female incarnations, it may not be as dominant, but if we have earned the right to masculine assertiveness and going outside and beyond ourselves, it will be strong in the female's chart. Masculinity is a kind of attitude. It's a kind of psychological posture. And because it is one-sided, it isn't greatly secure. But it's not about to hide its insecurity. Instead, it has that philosophy, well, I'm a man, I should be able to do things. And little boys hear about it all the time. You're a boy, you should be, there's a tendency to force people to do things like that. And that's what one is raised up in. It's a psychological posture of being a man. It is an overt stance. It is a tendency to do things by force. It's candid, it's open, and it's outward, but it's all masculine. Personification that likes tight clothing, and it likes plain speaking, which is chewing somebody out. It wants a statement of self, and part of that statement itself is respect. And if it doesn't get respect, it'll rub your nose into the ground until you give it respect. Is a really respectable attitude, isn't it? If you listen, I don't have television, so I don't know what goes on in television, but if you listen to the ads on the radio or you see them in the print media, this is what they appeal to when they try to recruit people into the various branches of the service. They recruit to masculinity. And even for women, they say you can be just as much of a man as the men are. And it's pretty straightforward that they know where to appeal. But this masculinity wants to feel itself in its muscularity. It wants to feel itself in its ability to thrust itself forward in life. It wants to be firm and driven and dynamic. It likes that. Yes. whether it's a piston or whatever, it's a martial quality. All right, the symbol. We have two varieties. In modern times, the symbol has become the one on the right, the circle with the arrow coming out of it. It used to be, in earlier times, the circle with the cross on top of it. Now it is seen as a shield with a spear behind it, or it is seen as an erect male organ. Either way, it is Mars all the way. In fact, that's even sanguine blood that is what causes the erection. Mars is proud of that, and it likes that whole idea. I made that with my blood. And it even talks to it as though it were another man. It's pretty childish. And not to say nothing of the fact that it takes the blood away from the brain. That's even more for Mars. Why should I be inhibited by thought? That only makes neurotics. Let me have something I can take action on. It indicates armament, defensive and aggressive. The shield part would be the Scorpio part. The spear part would be the aggressive part. We prefer to waste energy and to revel in it, in what it does to others, just to have the experience of it being put to use. Now, in the United States chart, some people might disagree with this, as the United States chart is a very highly controversial thing. Mars is near the ascendant in the United States chart, and that means that without the rest of the world, we are seen as a warlike nation. We're seen as a hawkish nation. You don't have to get very far out of the United States to see that. Just go to Canada and start talking to people and they'll think we're hawkish. I've traveled recently to South America, and every country in South America thinks that we're not only hawkish, but that we're cruel, and that we have to make our point by putting in cruel dictators and things like that. We're not all down there. Mars in the United States chart is in Gemini, and that shows the enormous preoccupation that we have with automobiles and transportation and that general machine-like consciousness. You know, the masculine types are the ones that liked the arms race. Now, certainly in the United States, we have a can-do attitude, and we've exercised that quite a bit. We often do that impulsively, without any kind of thought control at all. As a cross surmounting a circle, it represents spirit subservient to matter or form. Now that can't truly be, because the spirit is way too much to be subservient to form, but the attempt to do so is very strong. You might say that in the human body we have a divided spiritual creative center. One part of the creative center is with the genitals and the sacrum. The other part is with the voice box and with the brain. And when you're associating creativity with the basic procreative stuff, you're associating the creative, you're putting, that's the circle that is below that drives things. That is the source of the Kundalini drive. And if the spiritual things may not be the highest priority, but it doesn't make any difference. Since spirit is eternal, it's going to run out in the long run anyway. And it indicates that irrepressibility of energy. You cannot defeat Mars. I think in my entire life, I've seen one horoscope that had a defeated Mars, but I didn't even know there. So we see that insistent drive from below, the indomitable spirit that is directable and that is responsible for all of our moving forward. In most religions, most ancient religions, it was called a kundalini, a creative force, and it was seen as the generous energy of the generative force. And that, if you see the symbol to this day, it is associated with that generative activity. In this way of looking at it, since it is a primitive planet, the symbol of Mars is something like a fountain of youth. It's something like there's always new spirit coming into manifestation through desire. In some instances, the cross is just like a square, and what we're looking at here is an attempt to square the circle or to materialize the circle in that symbol. That isn't completely likely because there isn't enough patience to do that, but it's part of a grand alchemical formula. If you take Mars, which is the simple energy, raw energy, and if you compare it with its planetary opposite, Venus, you have the perfecting and refining. And if you put the two symbols together and put the cross in between, you have Mars, Earth, and Venus. And this was a very sacred alchemical symbol for healing. And it represented taking that basic energy and converting it to love in a practical sense and being able to heal by taking that energy and using it to help others who are short of it or who have it blocked or something of that nature. So there is something about Mars that its ultimate goal is perfection, but it's a long way from being there yet. Mythologically, in Greece, it was Ares, A-R-E-S, not like the sign A-R-I-E-S, and the Romans called it Mars. It is male warriors, what the name means, and any time there was a fight, Mars was present. He instigated if there wasn't any fighting going on, and he wanted some to participate in. Now, he was born to Zeus in Hera. That is, his father and mother were sister and brother. And it's like saying the basic masculine and the basic feminine, if united together, result in energy or in action. Now, some say that he was born to Hera as a result of parthenogenesis. That is, she took an herb of some kind or another, and from that herb she was impregnated just by the consumption of the herb. It's a little bit too recondite for us to go in. Mars is a twin. He wasn't born alone. He has a sister whose name is Eris, E-R-I-S, which only crossword puzzlers know. She is the goddess of strife. And she probably represents the feminine side of Mars, which is in Scorpio. In Scorpio, and Aries, Mars does fight. And he's very masculine and lets have it out. But with Mars in Scorpio, there is something of that same kind of thing there, but it's more veiled and it's more hidden and it's not out in the open. But at any rate, Eris stirs up the fights, and he enters in on one side or the other, whichever side will produce the better fight, and sometimes he'll even switch from one side to the other because he wants a hotter battle. This, mythologically, he's quite an interesting character. That's the way energy is. Energy isn't partisan. That's why, that's part of the psychology. The same person who makes a good gunfighter makes a good sheriff. It's just that they're doing their fighting on the other side of the law. And I guess the sheriff is, likes that shiny badge, and he gets badge crazy just as much as the gunslinger got gun crazy. He's immature. And sometimes in his immaturity, he's even a coward. In the Iliad, he runs off the battlefield because he was injured. He said, well, I'm an immortal. My Aoi is going to be immortal, and it's going to last forever and ever. You see, that's that kind of a thing. He's friends to Hades, who rules the underworld, but he never goes into the underworld because it's just too overwhelming to him. But Hades loves him because he likes to populate the kingdom of Hades. As long as Mars is around, there will be, always be new recruits to the underworld. When he fights, he isn't always victorious. The reason being is because he isn't disciplined. He's inconsistent and erratic, and he's trying to do too many things. And sometimes right in the middle of things, if he gets a little bored, he'll just go off and ride another hobby horse, and it'll be something all altogether different. Athena twice defeats him, but Athena was the defender. For defending other people, she didn't have all of this personal pride at stake, and she fought for the sake of others rather than just for the pizzazz of it. Even two human beings win in a battle over Mars. Heracles does it, as does Diomedes. He's the one that chased them off the field in the Iliad. So one in a heroic state can overcome, can defeat energy, not defeat it in the way that it's overwhelmed, but one can win. He was a murderer, and he was acquitted of one murder, but the legal references were very obscure, and it was always in the always a matter of question about him. I don't know about the other murder, I don't recall. A murder being different than war. It was like a homicide with some intent. He has an illicit ongoing affair with Aphrodite, his planetary opposite. We've talked about it before. Mars and Venus are the planets of immediate falling into love, or immediate falling into passion, or something like that. The result of the union of Aries and Aphrodite is Eros, the little Cupid, who wants to spread it all around. He took the spear and used it in other ways. Mars is obviously more of a being of passion than he is a being of love. He seduces Eos and produces erotic love, which is born from the union, and all the while he is professing love to Venus. He's just not faithful. He will get whatever has his desire. Also by Venus, he is the father of Harmonia. This is the Greek version of the Garden of Eden story. They have it among the gods. Mars and Venus put together represent sexual passion. And Harmonia was the original Eve in the line of Cadmus. She's the one that was, together with Cadmus, they founded the whole lineage of that part of the world. All brass, which is a combination of Mars and Venus, is symbolized by Mars. It's the material of sin. What? Yes. Yes. In the north, Mars is known as Tyre, the name for our Tuesday. Our Tuesday is in German Tyrestag. Sometimes it's called Tiwaz. And he's the one-handed god. And he's not very smart. The Norse people and the Germans also knew he was not very smart. There was this horrible beast. There were several horrible beasts that were always causing trouble for the gods. And Fenris the wolf was one of them. And he was a horrible, voracious creature that was always threatening to destroy the gods or anything that was created by the gods. So they decided to tie him up. And to tie him up, they had to have a special cord that would not break. And there were three elements to remember what they all are. But one of them was the footfall of a cat. It was all extremely subtle things that went together into making the cord. But the question became, how do we get the cord around Fenris so we can tie him up and keep him in bay? And so they went to Loki, who is the Saturn, and as we said, he was sort of a shyster, and he had a loophole for everything. And Loki goes to Fenris and says, I have this new rope that I would like to try out. Would you be willing to use it as a harness for a while? And Fenris says, are you kidding? I wouldn't do that. He said, I want some assurance that I'm not going to be captivated in this. So Loki goes to Tyre and he says to him, are you really brave? And Tyre says, I'm ultimately brave. Can you prove that to me? And Tyre says, sure, I can prove that. So it takes him to where Fenris is. He says, Fenris, open your mouth. This is your assurance that Tyre will put his hand in your mouth. And he tells Tyre, this is the proof of your bravery to see whether you're afraid of a wolf or not. So Tyre puts his hand in. Hey, you know the story. He gets tied up, and in his rage, he makes sure he gets his hand. And that's he stays tied up until the Götterdämmerungen, when the two of them fight it out, Tyre and Fenris. Thor fights it out with the Midgard serpent, and I forget who it is that Odin fights it out with, but they fight it out until there's mutual destruction. It's called the Götterdämmerungen. So in short, to the Norse, he was the god of the berserkers. He was the god of might and of strength and of simplicity, which translated means stupidity. He was famous for his sexuality, and in his sexuality, he was fierce, forceful, and brutal. So the modern ideas of rough sex didn't begin with the moderns. They go back hundreds, if not thousands of years into the gods. There must be something that goes deep within the psyche of the human. I've never, I can't get anywhere near anything like that for a lab experiment, so it'll have to be an unseen mystery to me unless somebody comes to me for counseling who has that ability. You can direct them to me. I'd like to understand the psychology of it by seeing someone who has it. All right, planetary figures. Every planet in our chart represents one or more people in our lives. Every person in our life represents one or more planets. One of the planetary figures of Mars is the rival. On any level, in any kind of endeavor, you'll always have a rival, and there'll always be a personal chance. And there's always that thing for each to try to get the utmost out of the situation and to best the other. Now, that's what Mars represents. You can find those kinds of people. I have Mars in Libra, which is sort of a swashbuckler place. It likes the close of knighthood, but it doesn't like the fighting. But it happens to be right near the Mars of a friend of mine, who is a magnificent man. And we have these arguments in which we, in the heat of the argument, we each draw on our very best capacities, and we just go at it sometimes for hours. I mean, now it's gotten to be such a thing that we like each other so much that we don't too much argue with each other. My nickname for him is Mr. Beaugest, because he looks like a knight in armor, you know, like he looks like a knight with the armor thrown off. He's always very stylish and all of that. Another person, planetary person in our life, could be the activator. Someone who excites us or encourages us to do things. Now, I have Mars in the first house, so I don't need an activator. I'm very much a self-starter. And so, in fact, I've had very few galvanizers who galvanize both the situation and us. But I did have them in my proximity in my childhood. My mother was an Aries, and she was the activator for my father. And if there was going to be any change in our family or in how we lived or where we lived or what we did, she was the one that was the activator. She instigated. She didn't do it like I ruled the household or anything like that, but she knew how to stimulate him. She knew how to get something going, and to get it going, the sooner the better. It was really interesting to see that growing up, and it continued all the way up until her death. Even her own illness was an activator to my father to do things that he wouldn't have done otherwise. The irritator is another planetary person, somebody who provokes you, the one who causes you to lose your temper, somebody who's really irksome, somebody who goads you. It can be somebody who is physically around you, and it can be somebody who is psychologically a goad. Usually they're the type of people, if they're psychological, that have sarcasm. They sort of burn you a little bit. If Mars is in a watery sign, it's somebody that can motivate you by, you know, getting your feelings stirring and things like that. Usually somebody who's crabby or cruel or mean or offensive. I've never had hardly any irritators in my life. But I have had one of the next kind in my life, the bully. One who believes that might makes everything right. And they like to win. I got into it with a bully. I got clobbered. I got clobbered twice, because later on when I injured my knee in playing football, it was the bully who did it. He didn't like the fact that I was getting past him on defense, and so he was going to show me a thing or two, and he did. That was one of the foolish things. My Mars, you know, I've been a little bit foolish about it. But in the bully, there's always an element of immaturity, which is why the bully can be overthrown. It's a perfect expression of Mars running off the battlefield. This guy was bigger than I was, and he was stronger than I was. He picked on little kids on the way to school, and I walked over and slugged them. I got decked. But it, It was successful. He didn't pick on little kids anymore because he had to tell all of his friends that he decked me. And when he did it, when he told all of his friends, he had to tell them the shameful fact, well, why did he start provoke the fight with you in the first place? And then he had to tell them, well, I was picking on little kids, and that's kind of a shameful thing. And so it was successful, even though I took it in chops. agitator irritator indicates the word means somebody that makes you feel bad, and there's something like, you know, like an irritant. An agitator is just somebody who stirs something up, but both of them are Mars figures. An agitator would be more like Mars in water, and irritator would be something more like Mars in Earth. It'd be something that gets under your skin. The courage bringer, either by their heroic example or somebody that something radiates from them. They have a charisma. Mars is a planet of charisma, especially if it's together with Neptune. But it's someone that gives you or lends you their strength or awakens your strength so that you're willing to do anything. One can even feel invulnerable and protected because of their courage. I have had several such instances in life. And my courage bringers have usually been women. Oh, I don't know. There are some stories I just can't tell about my life. But let's just say I and a woman friend were in mortal peril. And no one knew that I and the woman friend were together. And I got signals of danger, and I just went up and said, come on, I'm taking this woman and we're going. And it could have cost me my life. And we're talking about really dangerous people. It hasn't always been that dangerous, but women have been that in my life. Young men, especially in a female's chart, how a woman relates to young men is indicated. Primitive, often, young men. I've had it happen in my life that I've had primitive young men. I have Mars opposite Saturn. It has a lot of good aspects, and the good aspects come out with women. It's sextile to Venus, and it's sextile to Pluto. But the bad sides of it come out with the opposition to Saturn. And this neighborhood used to be a very tough neighborhood, and there were some really nasty young men in it. They sugared my motorcycle, and they stole my motorcycle, and did all kinds of things like that. And I've had my share of them, and they were frustrating to me. The colors of Mars, obviously red, especially the bright reds, the scarlet reds, vermilion, cerise, rust. Before it gets dark, blood red. The metals of Mars are iron, and even iron made into steel. It's the metal of combat, but it's a metal that takes tempering. It's the metal of weaponry, of construction, and it has that ability that it can be trained and charismatic power comes out of it. That is, it's a element that can be magnetized. And when it has that magnetization, it has, you might say, a physical charisma about it. Sulfur is a martial element. It's fiery, it's acidic, it's corrosive, it's necessary to the building of protein in the body. Protein itself is a martial thing. the nitrates, Scorpio, as we said earlier, is ruled by Mars. Trees, plants, herbs, and foods. I don't know of many trees around here. The ironwood and the hickory trees are martial trees. Yes?
I have another question. That was for the statement you just made, that the metals can be magnetized.
Yeah. That it is one of the only metals that can be magnetized. It's not pure enough. It's not pure enough iron. There's something that, in the formation of an alloy, most minerals exist as crystals. But in the formation of an alloy, the alloy is not a compound, but the metals that are together in an alloy get with, you know, they interpenetrate each other. I can't say interpenetrate, but they're all fused so closely together, it's almost as though the iron atoms are lined by the other metals or the other things that are in the steel, and they are then not vulnerable to magnetization. Iron, when it's in its most crystalline state, is the most easily magnetizable.
So what you're saying then is stainless steel would not be considered a Mars metal?
It's a Mars metal, but it doesn't have the property of magnetization. Magnetization is only one of the qualities of Mars. The basic iron quality is still, that is, you know, the great majority of stainless steel is iron, but there's just enough of the other stuff in it in such a way that that property of iron or that martial property of iron cannot be manifest. Mars is not so much a tree planet. It's more the planet of the underbrush, especially if there are thorns. All of the bramble berries, like raspberries and blackberries and loganberries and all of those things, even strawberries with their, you know, they got a little oomph to them in their freshness. In herbs, all of the muscular stimulants, not the nervous stimulants, but the muscular stimulants, together with the sun, tonics, herbs that tone you, and febrifuges, that is, herbs that fight fever, usually by promoting the fever to burn itself out. Ginger is a martial herb. Peppers, especially cayenne pepper, is a martial herb. Mustard is a martial herb, as is horseradish. You get the picture. Onions and garlics are high sulfur foods, and they're martial. And the protein foods, if you're a vegetarian, beans. Any kind of high protein food. If you're a flesh eater, all of the flesh that you eat is a martial thing, because it's muscle, it's what it is. The planetary archangel. Samael. And Tuesday is the day of Mars. Therefore, if you're having trouble controlling your temper, or if you're having difficulty getting your energy up, and you want planetary assistance, now this is not something you want to do all the time. This is something that you maybe do several times in a lifetime, because you don't want to get to be like those people that get weakened by assistance rather than strengthened. You know, there are people that won't go to the toilet without throwing any chain first. What? I said there are people who won't go to the toilet without throwing any chain first to see whether it's a good hour, whether it's going to be a good bowel movement or not. So if you take, you know, if it's an important issue and you want to work in harmony with the cosmos, if you take Tuesday at sunrise and the first hour thereafter and talk to Samael within yourself. You know, this might sound crazy to a lot of people, but if you try it, and if you have faith and you put yourself open, you'd be surprised at what comes out of you. Like, after all, we've got a focus of God inside of us, which means we have a focus of divine wisdom inside of us. And if we're working in harmony with the entire cosmos, it's not surprising that things like that would happen. Physiologically, obviously all the muscles, and most especially the voluntary muscles. The left cerebral hemisphere is ruled by Mars, the aggressive hemisphere. Hemoglobin is ruled by Mars. Do you know in the time that I made that sentence, between all of us, we made millions of cells of hemoglobin? We have a chemistry going on in our body so marvelous and so rapid that it's astounding what's going on inside of us that we don't even have the slightest idea. You know, we have to have a serious illness before we recognize that something's going on inside of us. But there's really a lot going on. Adrenaline is ruled by Mars. It's somewhat together with Jupiter. The testes are ruled by Mars. And the basic body temperature is ruled by Mars, especially in relation to Aries. In the astrological categories, it's a primitive planet, obviously, that left to its own devices, or at our stage of human evolution, it indicates primitive behavior. It's obviously a masculine planet, and it is a superior planet, meaning that its orbit is outside the orbit of the Earth, but it's so close that it sometimes almost acts like an inferior planet. It takes 2 years to go in its orbit, so there are every other year things. It's a dynamic planet. We've been saying that all evening. It's a diurnal planet. It's hot and dry, and it is the planetary opposite of Venus. So that if you have Mars with no help to it at all, and you want to calm it down, you bring in Venus. It's a malefic planet, meaning to say that it is involved with one kind of evil. It's the evil of commission, just as Saturn was the greater malefic involved with the sins of omission. With commission, you can only do so much, and then you spend yourself, so it's that kind of sinning. It's an intermediary planet. It's not really a personal planet like the inner planets, which work very well with progressions, but it's not like a generational planet like the outer planets, which work more with transits. So it's sort of like an in-between planet. It rules Aries and it rules Scorpio. Therefore, if you have Aries on the second house, you're likely to be spendthrifty. You spend your money really quickly. Easy come, easy go. Put Mars in the 11th house, you spend your money on your friends. Or Mars in the 5th house, you spend your money on your children. Or Mars in the 9th house, you tithe exorbitantly. If you have Scorpio on the cusp of the 11th house, there might be a tendency to be secretive with your friends or to be in some kind of cabal or something like that. And if Mars is in the second house, it's for money. If Mars is in the third house, it would be for some kind of communicative activity, like let's hold this back until just the right time for it to come out. If Scorpio is on the cusp of the seventh house, it could indicate a marriage for sexuality. And if Mars is in the ninth house and Scorpio is on the cusp of the seventh, one might marry as part of a career move, that you advance your career by your marriage, or your marriage leads you to being more career oriented. Yes, sir. 10th house. I'm sorry. Yes, yes. Mars in the fourth house, that's usually somebody that likes to do a lot of work at home. If it is, for some people, it's the type of person that likes to do homebody things, but not necessarily cleaning up. All right. It is, boy, I hate, you know, I don't want this to turn into this. It is often a case of desires that are held in abeyance because of some condition in a past life, and then when that contingency is fulfilled, then it comes into the open. A very dear friend of mine just had Mars pass over the ascendant after having been in her 12th house all of her life, and suddenly she's finding herself with energy that she doesn't know how to control or what to do. But sometimes Mars in the 12th house is secret enemies that will become active secret enemies, like be very careful about speed traps. And you know, she's a cab driver. Oh, okay. You take the cab all the time, so you know. Oh, I have. I didn't realize that. You're keeping tabs on me. You're the kind that keeps score, huh? Okay. If Mars has its detriment in Taurus, where it can't stand to be walled in, or in Libra, which is often, as it is with myself, the symbol of a coward. It's exalted in Capricorn, where it becomes a field marshal. The discipline brings the energy to perfection in execution. Mars in Cancer is fall and fall, and that is all kinds of action that doesn't get anywhere. It's sort of like treading water or having a boiling pot. The pot just boils. It doesn't do anything. It's not like harnessing steam or something like that. If Mars is in the east, anywhere in the first house or halfway into the 12th house, but especially in the ascendant, the person is likely to be lean, and they're likely to be muscular, and they're likely, like myself, to have irregular complexion. They like tight clothing, like myself. They're temperamental, and I'm never you like new shiny things. Mars in the east sometimes has very angular features. And it makes for a very vital personality, but not necessarily a high endurance personality. And they're very much given to physical culture. And believe it or not, there have been times in my life where I have done as many as 50 push-ups a day. They like uniforms. And there's somewhat of a tendency to be impulsive. They're very temperature sensitive. Because I have Neptune conjoined the ascendant, I had two different kinds of temperature sensitivity. Mars in the east sometimes indicates some gnarly features. And they're always attracted to machines. And if afflicted, to infernal machines. It makes for red hair. And if I grow my beard out, my beard is red. My brother is a redhead. He has Mars conjoined the ascendant. It makes for knotty kinds of muscles, not wiry, which is Saturn, but knotty. And it's likely to scars and pockmarks, which I have both. And it's likely to make a person hirsute. I'm not especially hairy myself, but my brother certainly. He's sort of like an orangutan. He has more hair on his back than most people have on their chest. Yeah. Sometimes Mars in the east, especially in a watery sign, makes for a flushed kind of complexion in what you would call a bilious pallor about a person. But pallor isn't the right word there. Mars in the east is more likely to fevers, more likely to arrogance or cruelty. I will plead to the former, but not the latter. It indicates more of a tapered body, which I do not have. Strong sex appeal, I'll let you decide that. Bushy eyebrows very often. And Mars in the east is likely to cuts, burns, scrapes, bruises, scalds, contusions, abrasions, breaks, and hemorrhages. That's it. Probably does. Yes, probably does. But you're in a level of alchemy at which I don't have expertise. If I knew the psychological alchemy of something like that, I might be able to answer it that way. But I'm not familiar with that. By the way, Mars, iron is not the most magnetic metal. Dysprosium is the most magnetic metal. And I don't know if it's ruled by Mars.